Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the free enterprise system when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property? That public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, zoning and planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org. ORG, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Hey, talking about the free enterprise system, this is a publication put out by the MacArthur Institute. And they're located in East Moline, Illinois. Why don't you get this name and number down? In fact, if you've got children and you're thinking about private school, they've got a private school up there. And I've talked to the editor, James R. Patrick, a time or two. And this is called the MacArthur Institute, 946th Avenue, East Moline, Illinois, 61244, zip code. And I get a phone up there, and just grab their phone number while we're thinking about it. The number is 309-796-1485. That's 309-796-1485. This publication is put out twice a month, called Foundations of Liberty. And they have different topics on here. One of them here is called the Supreme Court. The next one's called the Free Enterprise System. They're a conservative group of educators, and they run a private school. And they're out here trying to reinvent the wheel, trying to reinvent this thing called the Free Enterprise System. And actually, the surprising part of it is the free enterprise system works everywhere in the world. It has worked from the Garden of Eden to the present time. And governments work their hearts out trying to stamp out the free enterprise system. And it's like bacteria. You can't stamp them out. You can kill a lot of them. I mean, you can disrupt them, but you never stamp them out. You can't get them all. And it just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. And the Foundations of Liberty is what this is called. That's the publication's title. It's called Foundations of Liberty. Okay, now you got the booklet's name. Now, it's about a 100-page booklet. It comes out twice a month. Neat little booklet here. It's you know, 6x4, I guess it's 4x6, something like that. And they have different authors in here, and they've probably got 5 or 6 articles in each one of these little booklets over here. They suggest, they've asked, they don't charge for the publication, just ask for donations. It's a religious institution. I think they're Baptists. I'm not certain about that. I wouldn't hold that against them. And the guy's name is James R. Patrick. If you're looking for a name, James R. Patrick is the editor. Remember, it's the MacArthur Institute, 946th Avenue, East Moline, Illinois. And their zip code is 61244-4406. So it's 5+4. And if you're outside the United States, we've got a 9-digit zip code. You need the first 5, 61244. And then if you'd stick a hyphen on there, they'll stick it right in their post office box, 4406. All right, last time we were talking about the free enterprise system, we're talking about capitalism. Now, capitalism has what we call an equality of opportunity attached to it. Capitalism gives a poor person an opportunity to become rich. That's pretty important. Capitalism gives a poor person an opportunity to become rich. It does not lock people into the condition of poverty. It calls on every individual to help his neighbor, but not to pauperize him by making him dependent. Independence for every person is the capitalist ideal. And that term, independence, I'm going to underline, because here in America, we have the exact opposite working. It's called dependence. People who are on Social Security are dependent. People that are on welfare and food stamps are dependent. Now, why are they dependent? Because they're practicing communists. So the other night on 60 Minutes, I believe it was, they had a story over there about Elkhart, Indiana. I think it was 60 Minutes. Elkhart, Indiana, it's the RV capital of America. That's where they make all the RVs. And they're in depressed times right now. Many of the companies there have gone upside down. People are on welfare and food stamps and one thing and another. And this is the result of communism, falsely called capitalism. See, we've hung the name capitalism on this communist process. And then there's a result that comes from it. And so now we're blaming capitalism. We say, well, see, capitalism didn't work. So now we got to go to something else. And so they come along with some new program thing. Now, the free enterprise system works, and it's been working for thousands of years. It will continue to work, and I've used this example. I'll use it once more. The marijuana growers of America are free enterprise capitalists. It is probably the single best example of free enterprise capitalism in the world today. It's the American marijuana growers. They don't have an association. They don't have a national foundation. They're all little small guys running around here growing a few plants here and there. And when you take the whole thing in mass, they produce more than the wheat growers, corn growers, soybean growers. It is the biggest agricultural crop in the nation. Totally independent from government subsidies and price supports. There are no marijuana growers in America going to Congress asking for a taxpayer bailout. You taxpayers out there do not have to support the marijuana growers of America. It's totally self-supporting. And I'm sorry to report to you that such a sleazy business is free enterprise, but then it was forced into free enterprise by government. And so government actually forces and creates free enterprise. Isn't that bizarre? Government is working its heart out to destroy the free enterprise system. It is the goal of every government on planet Earth to absolutely exterminate free enterprise. And in the process, they create more of it. And the harder they try, the more of it they create. It's like a flu virus. The harder you work to stamp it out, the more you spread it. Now, not everybody can take advantage of it. And those that are practicing communists cannot take advantage of free enterprise capitalism. And those that are working for wages, you know, General Motors, and you want to belong to the union, you cannot take advantage of the free enterprise capitalist system. You are a part and parcel with the proletariat. You're a part and parcel with the communist system. And the communist system's fine. I don't have any objection to it. And I'm not here trying to get you people to give up communism. So, you know, if you think I'm trying to get on the political bandwagon here and get you to change your lifestyle, forget that. I'm not here to do that. I'm just here to report. I'm a reporter, and I like to report on facts. You know, this is the way it is. You know, like it or lump it. And the like it or lump it here comes from the Foundations of Liberty. They put out an article here. It's actually a whole booklet here that deals with this thing of the free enterprise system. And I thought, well, shucks, I might as well do a story on the free enterprise system. Not that anybody out there wants to do it. I'm not suggesting that. But there might be two or three of you out there that might be interested in it. And here at the law school, we teach this free enterprise system in the form of our business school. It's the second school that I recommend. Oftentimes people say, well, which you offer eight schools, Mr. Gordon. Which school should I start on? Tell them tax and status, number one. Business, number two. Courtroom strategy and procedure, number three. And then the Mosaic Law and Doctrines, number four. Then we can talk about family law and civil rights and subsistence and survival and how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less after we get some fundamentals down. And in looking through my desk drawer here, I found two or three of these booklets from the Foundations of Liberty. And this is one here on the free enterprise system. And I thought, gee, let me read that. Pulled it out and read it and said, gosh, what a report. So let's talk about this thing of independence for every person is the capitalist ideal. And independence would be freedom from Social Security, freedom from welfare and food stamps. As long as you people are on food stamps and welfare and Social Security, you can't be independent. You are already dependent. Now, if dependence is where you want to be, stick right where you're at because you've succeeded beyond your wildest expectations. If independence is what you're looking for, then listen up. When a person contracts to work for a day, a week, or a month before he's paid, he's practicing capitalism. It is a series of contracts for transactions to be completed in the future. Capitalism is promise and fulfillment. Capitalism offers full employment to those who want to work. The worker is free to accept a job at any wage that he can get. He can join with his fellows in voluntary association to improve his salary and working conditions. He can change jobs or start his own business. He relies on his ability to perform rather than on the coercive power of the state to force his employment. Capitalism is colorblind. Black, brown, yellow, red, and white are alike in the marketplace. A person is regarded for his ability rather than his race. Economic rewards in the marketplace, like honor and acclaim on the playing field, are proportionate to performance. The person who has the most skill, ability, and ingenuity to produce is paid accordingly by the people who value and need his goods and services. So when I hear somebody say, oh, well, you know, there's this racism going on over here. Excuse me. Who in hell knows what color your skin was when you made that chair? You know, there's a lot of, I was watching Antiques Roadshow the other day, and there were some old-timey guys making furniture back in the olden days. And there was a table on there. It was made in 1967, and it was worth $40,000. And it was a pretty plain Jane table, if you want my opinion of it. It wasn't anything spectacular. But anyway, it was made by some guy in 1967, and since that time, this guy's work is it was more than a table, it was an artwork. He used very rare woods and put them together in a pattern. He was looking for certain grains and one thing and another. He made custom furniture. And he was making artwork at the same time, $40,000. And I thought, gee, I wonder if that guy was black, was he white, was he Oriental? He had a funny name. I think he was Oriental. I think he was a Japanese guy. That's my, based upon his name, I thought he's Japanese. Now, the guy's dead today, but what difference does it make? And the lady that's got the table, she's got a $40,000 table. She bought it brand new in 1967 from this guy. She commissioned him to make the table for the $650. Today, this guy's table's worth $40,000, which is probably about $650, about the same price that she paid for it back in 1967. But nevertheless, you know, in today's dollars, you know it's worth quite a bit more in depreciated dollars. And this lady was very, very happy about this table that she had over here. Now, let's suppose she takes that table out and she sells it for $20,000. Would you say that somebody took advantage of her? Because I wouldn't pay her $40,000 for the table, because my motivation is to buy the table from her for $20,000 and sell it for $40,000. That's the risk I take. If I buy it for $20,000, do you think I'll be able to sell it for $40,000? No, it was appraised at $40,000. And a retail buyer might be willing to pay $40,000, but I don't want that table myself. I just want to buy it and sell it. So salesmen come into this thing of capitalists. In fact, there's a neat little story here. I'm going to skip ahead, and there's a note here written by this lady in the next section over here, and she says this is a thank you note. Listen to this thank you note. It's a thank you note to all businessmen, much maligned for your exploitation. My thanks for the exploiting that you have done to me. Because without you, I would still be doing my laundry in the stream and drying my clothes on a rock. Without you businessmen, I would still be walking or traveling astride a horse at best. I would still be weaving my own clothes and never dreaming of a wash and wear garment. I would have to cook open or over an open fire in shells or some other natural substance. Thank you, businessmen, for making possible the hospitals that have saved my life, the operating rooms, and the anesthetic that makes surgery possible. Thank you for so many things. Thank you for my television, my radio, my lawnmower, and the ability to own a house because you gave me a job. I sit here at my typewriter that you made available and look around me at all of the things that would be missing if you, the businessman, had not been motivated by profits or a problem to solve. My lights, gas, and indoor plumbing, my electric blanket, waffle iron, and dishwasher, my electric toothbrush, watch, and vacuum cleaner. Thank you, businessman. Thank you, advertising men, for telling me about all of these new products that are available. Dear businessmen, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for making my life easier and giving me the time to write notes like this. I could not have done all of this, and bless you for doing it. The books I read, my piano, my tape recorder are priced low enough because you were able to mass produce them. The money you have made, my friends, you have earned. Signed by Patricia Carney, a freelance writer in California. I think that Patricia has hit the nail on the head. I'm a businessman. Oftentimes, I find myself being maligned. I'm called a greedy capitalist. I'm looked at that as an exploiter or exploitor. And I've been maligned as a businessman over the years. I employed 30 employees in one of my businesses. Produced $1 million a year. I'm happy to report to you today, I employ no one and produce nothing, which is what my government wanted. And I want to please my government. But I think that I would be more valuable employing 30 people and producing something than I am living my life as a businessman not employing anybody. But you see, I found that the government interfered in the marketplace for employment to such a degree that in order for me to hire you, I have to pay the government 16% of what I pay you, and that the government will not allow me to bargain and contract with you. They require that I pay you minimum wage. They've set the wage, and they say, I have to pay this or else. So I said, well, okay, and if I have to pay this guy this amount, and if I have to pay this rental to his government master in order to hire him, the burden on me is such that I decline to hire any of you people. That's all. So I don't want any employees. And I haven't employed anybody since 1981. That was my last employee, 1981. Now, my standard of living has not declined at all. In fact, my standard of living is as high as or higher than it was in 1981 when I used to employ people and produce things. Now, I'm sorry that it's this way, but big government has imposed upon me a communist orthodoxy that I reject. I don't reject the communist orthodoxy for you, however. If you want to practice communism, God love you, get out there and get after it. And if it prospers you, and if you're doing well at it, and you love it, and you like it, and you want more of it, God love you, vote for Barack Obama again. Vote the straight Republican ticket like you did for George Bush. Republicans and Democrats here in the United States promise more communism. I'm not opposed to that. But I'm opposed to having to give up my time, my effort, and my energy to promote the welfare of parasites who produce nothing and consume much, and then tell me what a wonderful job they're doing for me. I experienced that, and it didn't work well for me, so I thought I'd butt out and back off. Now, here in America, we have great, great advantages and a great, great standard of living. Of course, now it's under threat, and it's being taken away from us. But it's not being taken away from us because of capitalism. It's being taken away from us because of communism. And I thought I'd do this story this week to give you an opportunity to see what communism and capitalism have done side by side. And then, you know, you can make your own choice. Keeping in mind that capitalism works in communist countries. In fact, it probably works better in communist countries. Let me tell you why. I was over in Hawaii, and Hawaii is a wonderful example of communist socialism in action. And the government of Hawaii requires painters to be licensed contractors. I mean, if you want to be a painting contractor, you got to be licensed. And in order for you to paint your house, you have to have a licensed contractor paint your house, with one exception. If you're a homeowner, you can paint your own house because of your right to property under our Constitution. So you can go down and get your own permits. You have to have a painting permit to paint your house. And you can get this painting permit as a homeowner. Well, while I was there, I had a student who was working for a company for $7 and some change an hour. And he could hardly make a living. Now, here was workers' paradise. I mean, here he is living in Hawaii, and he's making $7 an hour. Now, he's paying $700 a month for a house, and he has to rent out one bedroom for $325 a month so that he can make the payments. So here's he and his wife and one child living in, you know, one-bedroom apartment, in a two-bedroom house is what it boils down to. They have to share the house with a boarder, because the price of housing is so high. So living here in the workers' paradise, he was having a problem making ends meet. So he came to my school, and we got to talking a little bit, and I said, well, the reason, Dan, that you're having such a problem is because you're a practicing communist. And if you'll get off of communism and go to work, you know, you can improve your lot in life. And he said, "How, Mr. Gordon, can I do that?" And I said, "Well, you quit your job and you go to work painting houses for yourself as a free enterprise entrepreneur." And he said, But I don't have enough money to get the license, and I don't have a truck, and I don't have all these things that I have to have in order to be a painting contractor so that I can be successful and compete with all the painting contractors in Hawaii." And I said, "Well, that's your mistake. Your mistake is you want to go out here and paint with all the painting contractors instead of being an entrepreneur. So now here's the way you do that. You get in your car and you just drive up on the hill." That's a big volcano there in Honolulu. Let's drive up on the hill. And you're going to see houses up there on both sides of the roads, both sides of the road. And you want to concentrate on those houses that are on the low side of the road, the ones that are built on the downhill side. A two-story house has four stories high. And if you'll take a look at that house, it has to be staged. That is, you have to put scaffold up there in order to paint it. Now, Hawaii has a wonderful built-in advantage here for entrepreneurs, painting entrepreneurs, because it rains every day there. And in order to paint a house, you have to tarp it. That is, you have to put a tarp up and then paint underneath the tarp because it's raining outside. You can't paint in the rain, so you have to tarp the house so that you can dry the surface off. You know, it rains every day there. So I said, you go up the road there, and you find a house that's got paint peeling from it. There's a man that needs to have his house painted. Now, in Hawaii, it costs $25,000 to paint a house. In Atlanta, Georgia, it costs $500. So that's because in Atlanta, Georgia, they have free enterprise, and in Honolulu, they have a state-controlled economy. So if you want to paint your house in Honolulu, it's going to cost you $25,000. And that's why people, you know, even lawyers and doctors and others, you know, are reticent to have their houses painted because it's a pretty expensive process. All right, so you knock on this guy's door and you say, "Look, I'm a painter. I'm an entrepreneur, and I want to paint your house. And I want to paint your house for $5,000, one-fifth of what it's going to cost you to hire a painting contractor. And the way I want to do that is that I want you to buy the material, and I want you to take out the permit, and I want you to hire me to paint your house. And then the way I'll do this and guarantee that you're going to get your money's worth is that you agree to contract with me, and I will prepare the surface of your house. That'll take me about a week. And when I get it prepared, then you pay me one-third of the job. And then I will paint your house. And when I finish painting your house, you pay me one-third of the job. And then I will come back and trim out your house. And when I finish the trim, you pay me the last third. And I will charge you $5,000 for labor, and it will cost you about $5,000 for material. That'll be $10,000. And for less than half of what a painting contractor is going to charge you, you can have your house painted." And he went out and started selling jobs, and before long he was so successful he made enough money that he could buy an airplane ticket and come back to the United States. So he went back to Atlanta, Georgia, where he could make $500 a house painting houses. Now, let me tell you, that's what entrepreneurial enterprise is all about. That's what capitalism is all about. And you can understand why the painting contractors of Hawaii hate free enterprise and why they go into the legislature seeking more and more regulation and more permits and more licenses. See? It's because it benefits that minority. It doesn't benefit the majority. It doesn't benefit the man that needs his house painted, and it doesn't benefit the painters. They're working for $7 an hour. Starving to death. Now, free enterprise, if all the painters in Hawaii would go into free enterprise, then the painting contractors would all go out of business. And then all of a sudden, everybody would be painting their own houses, or people would be hiring people to paint their houses, and you'd have a renaissance of capitalism, a renaissance in the economy. And then you can do that individually. This young fellow, Daniel, did it for himself. He didn't change the painting contractors of Hawaii. He didn't change the laws of Hawaii, but he changed his own circumstances, and pretty soon he was painting a house a month. Now, instead of making $7 an hour for 167 hours a month, 167 times 7 is, we'll call it 8. Instead of making, you know, less than $1,500 a month, he's now making $5,000 a month. Takes about a month to paint a house in Hawaii. $5,000 a month. He tripled his wages and cut prices in half. Now, that's what capitalism does. That's what free enterprise is all about. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the free enterprise system, and I thought I'd give you an example there of a real-life case, real-life student over in Honolulu. Those kinds of cases are like pig tracks in a barnyard. I can tell you a dozen stories a day about successful entrepreneurs who have made it out here in the communist environment, the fascist communist environment of the United States of America. Now, we like to call ourselves capitalists over here, but actually we've degenerated into fascists. And the fascists in General Motors and Chrysler and these big banks like Bank of America have now gone to government, and the government now is taxing you, the taxpayer, to support these businesses that are too big to fail. Now, I don't think that these businesses are too big to fail. I don't believe that. Now, Americans believe it, and I guess the taxpayers of America believe it and want to bail these businesses out. But that's their choice, and if that's what they want to do, then get after it. My choice is, no, I don't want to do that, and so I've opted out. I'm not complaining about you taxpayers bailing out Bank of America. I looked at it and said, I don't want to do that. So I'm opting out. Count me out of that program. I'm not going to bail General Motors out. I'm not going to underwrite General Motors and their program. Now, I don't care if their stockholders and bondholders and taxpayers want to do that. I'm not opposed to it. And the president wants to do it, and Congress wants to do it. And I'm sure that it's good for stockholders and bondholders of Bank of America and all these various places. But what does it do for George Gordon? What does it do for Joe Sixpack? So the reason that I opted out of it was because it's a socialist communist ideology which has been tried in the past, and it's always failed in the past. So why do I want to continue on with something that I know is a failure? Now, if you don't know that that has been tried and failed in the past and you think it might succeed, then it's an experiment. And if you want to experiment with your life, your time, your effort, and your energy, get after it. I don't want to stop you. But I tested it, and it didn't work for me, and so I don't think it's going to work for you any better than it did for me. Now, remember we were talking about capitalism as colorblind? All right. Well, the marketplace comes into play here, and this is what we call the free marketplace, and I like that free marketplace. And here at the law school, we don't have any government licenses, permits, bonds, degrees. You know, when you come to this school, you come here because you want to learn something. You know, we've got something to teach, and so you pay your tuition, and we tell you what you want to know. It's just that simple. And we don't guarantee that you're going to make it here, get a job. We're not going to put you in some job placement opportunity program over here so you can get a job with General Motors or anything else. We're in the business of teaching people to be competent. Just that simple. We teach the Ten Commandment model, which requires individual responsibility. You got to get off your dead ass and go to work. And that's life. That's the way it is. Now, I don't have any government guarantees. I don't have any government bailouts. I want to tell you, I'm 70 years old, and I don't draw Social Security. I paid into the program, and I opted out of it. I'm sorry I paid into it. I'm sorry I joined it, but, you know, I woke up one day, and I said, hell, this isn't for me. I'm not on welfare. I'm not on food stamps. I don't have any government guarantees. I don't have any bailouts. I'm not looking for you taxpayers out there to support this school. If I can't make it, I need to go out of business. Just that simple. It's no big mystery. And I'm not a burden on anybody. Not costing you taxpayers anything. And I'm out here and I'm providing a service, and I'm teaching people. Like I showed you this Dan over here, he's making $7 an hour. Let's see how much he was making at $5,000 a month. There's 167 hours in a working month. 40 hours a week. 4, 8, 12, 116, yeah. 167 hours in a working month. Let's take $5,000 and divide that by 167. And that's $29.94 an hour. Now, here's Dan making seven something an hour. We'll call it $8 an hour. And he goes 8, 16, 24. He doesn't quadruple his pay, but he more than triples it. He gets more than $24 an hour. Now, he was working for a building maintenance company, a painting company. He was a painter. And they're paying him $8 an hour. And he goes out and goes into competition. Remember, we talked about this story about building chairs? And an employee goes out and creates another chair company. Competition is not bad. Competition's good. I'm not opposed to other law schools. I'm not opposed to Harvard. I'm not opposed to Yale or Brigham Young University Law School. They're all fine schools, and people pay their tuitions and go to those schools every day of the week. But I have to come up with a better mousetrap, and the Gordon Law School is a better mousetrap than the Harvard Law School. We've got things that we offer here that they don't have at Harvard, and we don't charge as much money as Harvard, so we can compete with them in price, not in name. We don't have the name Harvard, but in price we can compete with them all day long. And in quality and in output and in the quality of our students, we can more than compete with Harvard. More. And our students, when they graduate here, make more than Harvard Law School graduates. We have one here. He's a Harvard Law School graduate here in Gainesville, Missouri. And I have students that make more money than he does. Now, that's not to say that Harvard's not a good place and that maybe he'd make more money. He could make more money if he lived in New York, but he decided he didn't want to do that. So I just wanted to point that out, that Henry Ford, do you know he only went to the sixth grade? Thomas Edison only went to the third grade. In 1930, it was complained about Henry Ford that he made $30 million in 1930. I mean, President Roosevelt and others complained bitterly that this sixth grade kid made $30 million that year. Henry Ford was an entrepreneur. He believed in free enterprise. He wasn't working for wages. Now, I want to tell you that if you're out here working for wages, or if, as George Bush said in 2004, he said, what Americans want are jobs, jobs, jobs. God love you people. If that's what you want in life is a job, get after it. But I want to tell you that I worked in a job for many years, and I didn't make a lot of money at that. And I found that when I had a job, I'd get laid off at the most inconvenient times, like, you know, the week before Christmas. And because of those layoffs, and because of the low pay, and because of the environment that I was placed in the employment realm, I woke up one day and I said, you know, I think I'll quit doing this. In my own self-interest, I think I'm going to quit working. It doesn't pay. There's no money in it. And surely there must be something that I can do that'll make more money and make me feel better in life than working for wages. So I quit. And I got to tell you that I'm happier today. I haven't had a job since 1968. I haven't had a real job since 1968. My first wife divorced me in part because I didn't have a real job. She told me one time, she says, why don't you go get a real job? She complained about that. And that's because as an entrepreneur, I don't have a steady paycheck coming in. I got to tell you, I don't know if I'm going to get paid this week or not. I don't know if I'm going to have any students this week or not. And so when I do have students, I have to save my money. I have to discipline myself. I'm in competition with Harvard, Yale, and Brigham Young. I mean, those guys have bigger, better names in law schools than I do. And it attracts people. You know, if you said, would you rather go to the Harvard Law School or the Gordon Law School? You know, just think that one through for a minute. And after Harvard is full, and you're still standing out on the sidewalk looking for a law school, you know, well, there's still this one. We still have a couple spaces available. See? And so that's the way that game has to be played. And you know, if Harvard, you know, doesn't leave anybody out on the street, you know, I might not eat this week. That's what an entrepreneur is all about. There's no guarantee, and there's competition out there in the marketplace. So capitalism is a belief that nobody is wise enough and knows enough to control the lives of other people. And when each person buys, sells, consumes, produces, saves, and spends at will, what Leonard Reed calls the miracle of the market enables everybody to benefit. Capitalism respects the market as the only effective and fair means of allocating scarce goods. A free market responds to shortages. It spurs production by raising prices. It arbitrarily controls merely accept and keep the shortages. You see, arbitrary controls merely accept and then keep the shortages in place. When rising prices inspire human ingenuity to invent and produce, the goods return and the prices fall. Now, nobody knows enough to build an airplane or a computer, but hundreds of people working together perform these amazing acts of creation. And this is the notable human achievement which Adam Smith called the division of labor. capitalism derives its name from the fact that capital is essential to the success of any venture, whether that venture involves an individual, a corporation, or a nation state. Capital is formed by thrift, and the person who accumulates capital is personally rewarded, and at the same time, he is a public benefactor. Capitalism makes every person a trustee of what he has. It appoints him general manager of his own life and property, and it holds him responsible for that trusteeship. Hey, that's me. That's where I'm at. I've got my own capital, and I'm responsible for it. And if I misappropriate it, bankruptcy is probably in the cards. Failure in business is probably going to overtake me. But if I'm careful with my money, and if I go out and invest it correctly, and if I produce for my students, and word of mouth is what really counts. You know, word of mouth. It's like that guy I just told you about, built that table back in 1967. You know, that guy doesn't have to advertise. That guy, his work sells itself. Now, you know, when somebody's dissatisfied with my performance and they go out and badmouth me, that's bad. That's the worst thing that can happen to me, is that you go out and badmouth me and you tell people the truth about me. I often tell people, when people lie about me, that's the best thing can happen to me. But when people tell the truth about me, boy, that's going to hurt. You're going to get to me there. But as long as you're lying about me, I'm all right. So when you're telling the truth about me, that's going to get me. And so when I go out into the marketplace, you're going to find out how well I do by the results that my students get. So if my student is successful and he goes out and he gets what he paid for, he came to school, he received what he came here for, he goes out and he's a success, he tells other people about it. Other people say, how did you do that? Where did you learn how to do that? Oh, well, I learned that over there in that school. Well, that's the school I want to go to. So success then comes from success. And everybody knows 10 people. So if you have bad experience or bad success and you're going to go tell your 10 friends, don't shop there. The reason Walmart is so successful and has been for so long, they have a better business model than their competitors. I've often said, why doesn't Kmart and Target and the rest of these stores over here in Costco send somebody over to Walmart and just observe what it is Walmart's doing? Just take a look at their business model. Remember, the customer is king. Why do I shop at Walmart as opposed to shopping at the guy next door? Why would I go to Walmart rather than Costco or Advantage or somebody else? Kmart. It's because the Walmart model is a better model. So if Kmart wants to compete with Walmart, then they better adopt the better model. They're going to have to satisfy their customers. That's all. That's what capitalism is all about. Now, there's also church and family ties. Capitalism is a natural ally of religion. The Judeo-Christian doctrines of stewardship and vocation are reflected in a free market economy. Churches and synagogues can be free and thriving with capitalism. When the churches falter, the moral strength of capitalism is diminished. Capitalism depends on the family for much of its social and moral strength. When the family disintegrates, the capitalist order falls into confusion and disarray. The motive power for the pursuit of life, liberty, and property is in the final analysis, the parental love of the home with its dimensions of ancestry and posterity. Capitalism enables entrepreneurs to be free people, taking their own risks and collecting their own rewards. Work is a privilege and a virtue under capitalism. Leisure is honored, but idleness is suspect. The idea that work is a scourge and a curse has no place in the climate of capitalism. Capitalism holds profits derived from risk and investment to be as honorable as wages or rent. Dividends paid to those who invest capital in an enterprise are as worthy as interest paid to a depositor in a savings bank. And the idea abroad that risk capital is unproductive is patently false. Now remember that capitalism holds profits derived from risk and investment to be as honorable as wages or rent. So when I invest money in my school, in my curriculum, in my program, and I pass that out to my students, and my students use that, and they go out into the marketplace, and they're successful in the marketplace, that's the proof of the pudding. The proof of the pudding is in the results that you get from it. If communism is so good, then where are the results? Where is the proof? Now, there's a voluntary way. Capitalism honors and promotes charity and virtue. True charity cannot be compelled. Universities, hospitals, social agencies are mere or more satisfactory and more fun when they derive from voluntary support. Money taken by force and then bestowed by formula is not a gift. The consumer is sovereign under capitalism. No bureaucrat, marketing expert, advertiser, politician, or self-appointed protector can tell him what to buy, sell, or make. Capitalism encourages invention, innovation, and technology and advance. Creativity cannot be legislated. Only free people can bring significant discovery to society. Thomas Edison was not commissioned by the government. The concept of free and private enterprise applies to learning and living as well as to production of goods and services. When a student learns anything, it is his own. Nobody, let alone a state, ever taught anybody anything. The state can compel conformity of a sort, but genuine learning is an individual matter. It's an act of free enterprise and discovery. This thing of compulsory education and compulsory public education is counterproductive to capitalism. Just that simple. Before we had compulsory education, we had capitalism in America from 1787 to 1933, before government got involved in public education. We had a better economy than we have today. Now, it's true that we have a better lifestyle than we had 100 years ago, but our economy isn't better. In fact, our economy is on the verge of collapse. Ultimately, this economy is going to collapse. That's the end result of it. And when this economy collapses, free enterprise will still be there, still be up and running. And that's because there will always be capitalists. There will always be people that are willing to take risk. Just like the marijuana growers of America. People that are willing to take risk for the rewards that go along with it. Now, there has to be respect for the individual, and capitalism honors the liberty and the dignity of every person. The private citizen is not regarded as a stupid dupe to every crook and con man. He is regarded as a free citizen under God and under the law, able to make his own choices, not a ward of the state, who must be protected by his self-appointed superiors who administer government office. Capitalism is a system which distributes power to the worker, the young, the consumer, the disadvantaged, by offering freedom for voluntary organization, dissent, change, choice, and political preference without hindrance from the police power of government. The renewal of capitalism could be the renewal of America. Nothing could be more radical or more timely or more beneficial to the responsible and trustworthy common people who are not beguiled by the soft and seductive promises of the new socialism created and espoused by government. So I'll pause here and make my observation. Hey, listen, if that's what you want, stick with it. But if you want freedom, liberty, independence, responsibility, you can have that too. And you can have that right here in the middle of communist society. Now, no political and economic system is perfect. Plato's Republic was in heaven, not on earth. If people are all generous and good, any system would work. But since people are self-centered, they're more free and happy in a system which allows the avarice and aggressiveness of each to serve the best interest of all. Capitalism is that system. It is modestly effective even in chains. The time has come for daring people to release it, and let us once more startle the world with the initiative and the productivity of free people. That's what you see going on in China today. They have unleashed in China free enterprise. That's why the Chinese economy is booming. Now, some of my academic colleagues will deny, dispute, or scorn the foregoing laudatory comments about capitalism. And they'll say that socialism benefits the poor, the young, the consumer, the minorities, and that capitalism protects the rich and the powerful. When discussion is joined, however, they will argue in terms of politics rather than economics, ideology rather than empirical evidence, and they will accuse me of doing the same. When the most persuasive case is produced, it will not convince. Political opinions are not changed by any form of rational argument. So let me just back up for a moment and point out. Here in America, we have the most successful and profitable agricultural enterprise on planet Earth. It's called marijuana. Marijuana. All right. Now, you can sit here and pontificate until hell freezes over, but you're not going to change the empirical evidence. It's more profitable than wheat, corn, soybeans, or cotton. And when government deregulates and gets out of corn, soybeans, cotton, and wheat, then wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton will become as profitable and productive as marijuana. But as long as government interferes and regulates and controls those enterprises, you'll get a result. And that's the results that we're observing today. Wherever free enterprise works, it has a result. It's just that simple. Now, when government comes in and intervenes, it makes great profits for those people that it's intervening for. And we took a look at the taxi cab as an example. In Mexico, they have free taxi cabs. Anybody with a car can put a light on the top of it and call himself a taxi. And the price of a taxi cab in Mexico is very, very competitive. They've got so many taxis in Mexico. Why would anybody walk? There's a cab available. Now go to New York and see if you can find a cab, and then take a look at the price when they haul you out to Kennedy or LaGuardia. You got a cab. It's called Yellow Cab. They're all painted the same color. They're all owned by the same company. Now take a look at the drivers and ask yourself if they're as prosperous as the free enterprise entrepreneurs of Mexico City and Guadalajara, where anybody can become a cab driver. Anybody can become a businessman. No, capitalism works, and it works around the world. Then don't forget it. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. I've got to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.